This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're damn right we are. You are damn right we are. Champions of the hockey world in 2026. Welcome back. It's WEEI. I'm Dan Ball. Thanks so much for riding with us here. I'm taking you up until 6 o'clock today, and then myself and my man Tristan Andrew, who's back behind the glass, and everybody else is hunkering down for a snowpocalypse 2026. And the fun world of snowbanks and spot savers and all of the other things that are a part of the greater Boston world that I am learning on the fly come back in our better than ever this week. So good luck out there. Again, if you've still got things to get, it looks like it's still a couple hours out. Should be kind of in the 9 to 10 o'clock range based on a quick little glance at the radar when things really start to hit. So good luck. Stay safe. Stay warm. Yes, Tristan.
Yeah, the timeline has shifted. When I looked at it last night, it was saying around like 6 or 7, which was like, oh, that's great. That's like right when I'm getting out of here.
But, yeah, exactly.
But now that it's like 9 o'clock, I'm feeling a little adventurous. Like, ooh, maybe I can like go out to Market Basket or something.
And yeah,
like maybe, and it's foolish. It is for naught, because I literally went to Market Basket the night before the last big storm, and I swear to you, you could not move in there.
Yeah,
it was shoulder to shoulder.
Crazy.
The stinking local news was there recording people. it was a madhouse.
Yeah, and so I would imagine that it is still the case with a lot of people who are realizing exactly what you said. Like, oh, I can sneak out before dinner and get my stuff and maybe just squeak in under the radar there before everything starts. So, yeah, that's kind of where things are sitting right now. So if you have plans tonight, then I would cancel them. But the United States gave us all plans this morning. 8:10 a.m. puck drop, United States and Canada. Ends up a 2-1 overtime victory for the United States of America in the gold medal game. Matt Boldy got the scoring started at the 6-minute mark from Austin Matthews and Quinn Hughes. Cale Makar tied it at the 18-16 mark. That's Cale Makar, Pride of UMass, just to make sure that everybody knows that information. Assisted by Pride of Quinnipiac University, Devon Taves, that tied it at 1 after 2. No goals in the third, and then just a minute 41 into 3-on-3 overtime. Jack Hughes, his fourth of the tournament from Zach Werenski, and the goaltender, Connor Hellebuck. That ends up being your game winner in overtime. 2-1, the United States sweeps in the hockey tournament. The women beat Canada and in overtime, and then the men beat Canada in overtime. Same score, same exact circumstances. It was just over 4 minutes into overtime for Megan Keller and 1:41 in for Jack Hughes. Early thoughts on the tournament. United States was kind of what I thought they would be in terms of their ranking. They were the second best team in this tournament, just in terms of the skill that you saw. The Canadians had the, without Sidney Crosby, had the three best players on the ice entering play. And I think you saw that. McDavid, MacKinnon, and Makar. Those three starting out overtime. It's impressive that Canada did not end things in the first shift in the extra period based on those three. Macklin Celebrini played at BU, number one overall pick, now plays for the San Jose Sharks, is going to be really good for a really long time. I think when this tournament comes around, God willing, as long as Gary Bettman allows NHL players to continue playing in the tournament, which I'm hoping based on the relative success of this one that we continue to see that in 2030 and beyond, you're going to see Macklin Celebrini be a face of the league and a face of the tournament. And it's going to go McDavid, Celebrini, and then everybody else at that point. I think that's kind of where this thing is headed with him. But that's okay, because even though maybe skill-wise the United States weren't quite as star-laden, as the Canadians were, as we saw on display today, they had that fight. They had just they were able to respond to the adversity of playing the all-star team to end all all-star teams in a way that I really wasn't sure that we'd see. And I didn't know about this group until we saw it, plain and simple. Like, they responded to a barrage in which Connor Hellebuyck had to make over 40 saves between regulation and overtime, faced 42 shots, made 41 saves. Tell you what, the rumors and the accusations against Connor Hellebuyck not being a big-time goaltender, which has been earned through numerous falters on very good Winnipeg Jets teams in the playoffs, that got erased in this tournament, and that specifically got erased today. He made, given the circumstances, one of the top, five saves that I've seen. That reach your paddle back behind you save on the rebound there for Taves in front of the net. If he scores that, I think we're talking about we're talking about a different tournament. Talking about a different color medal that's being worn by the Americans, I think. Charlie McAvoy gets in there behind him, kind of makes a save on one. There were three, four opportunities in that third period for Canada where you just kind of scratch your head and go, maybe the hockey gods are on your side. And sometimes it's that. It's a mix of opportunistic scoring and puck luck. Sometimes it really is as simple as that. Now, granted, the Canadians had just a little bit of puck luck on their side. The double doink at the end of the second period, that could have changed things, responding right after the Makar goal. That really, really would have made an interesting third period if the United States had to defend a lead in the third. But that wasn't the case. And overall, I mean, I think the overall tournament was just gangbusters, man. Sweden bouncing back from a terrible start to be a factor once again, probably regarded as the third best team in the tournament. They look great. The Slovakians getting to where they did. I know that it wasn't the greatest end to the tournament. But, you know, they brought more than I think a lot of people expected. They're really, other than Italy and France, I mean, there wasn't a team that you looked at and went, this team can't hang. And Tristan,
even,
I think
even
that's
Latvia.
Yeah. That's,
even Latvia was showing that they could hang around.
That's kind of what I what I was curious to get your thoughts on is that other than the host team and you know, poor France out there, the rest of your bracket had teams that brought something, that brought the fight, that had superstars. And this was a really cool commentary 12 years after the last time that the NHL players were in the Olympics of where the game of hockey is. And I really loved to see the depth of talent that was on display in the tournament.
Oh, absolutely. I would have to agree with that wholesale, just because I was talking to one of my friends the other night. They were really watching more for the women's team. And I mentioned the fact that, like, oh, you know, USA and Canada, the men are going for the gold medal. Wouldn't that be something if both men's and women's teams won? And they were like, well, no. And I had to come in and correct them, because, like, you know, rising tides lift all ships. And if more PWHL players are getting exposure through the Winter Games, which they have.
Right.
Same with the NHL players. That only stands to help hockey as a whole. And I know it's easier to sit here in Boston, a hockey city through and through, and say those things. But I really think that because of this Winter Olympic Games in Milan, hockey, men's, women's, whatever, is getting more exposure than ever before.
Yeah, and I hope that continues. I mean, it's a great point. Austin Matthews is from Arizona. Like, that's the captain of Team USA, and I know he was a bit of a shrinking violet as the games got bigger in terms of importance, but that's still a face of USA hockey that is from, like you talk about, a non-traditional hockey market. So do you see this having a ripple effect to where maybe some of the youth programs gain a little bit of steam? I don't know. It's one of the most unfortunate things about the game of hockey, as you know, somebody who experienced it and whose parents experienced it, and I'm sure a ton of people out there have this same kind of experience. It's an expensive sport to play. you have to, especially for kids that are at the, like going into the preteen and teen years where you're constantly growing into and out of things. It's new sticks, it's new skates, it's new gloves, it's a new helmet. It's a helmet that matches the team they're playing for. It's a shell that covers your pants that matches the team you're playing for.
It's
tryout fees, it's registration fees, it's game fees, it's paying the coaches, paying for ice time. It's all this kind of stuff that goes into just getting a kid out on the ice, and then you have to teach them how to skate, and you have to hope that they can take that into actually learning and picking up how to play the game. So there are so many barriers for entry for the game of hockey that you don't see for basketball, you don't see for soccer, even you don't see for a sport like lacrosse, which is growing exponentially right now and almost jumping over baseball in terms of the travel levels and the high school levels and all that. There's so many different barriers for entry that they still need to find a way to try to make it more accessible, to subsidize, to make it easier to get secondhand equipment so you don't have to pay. I mean, seeing some of the numbers on a new hockey stick, if you walk through Pure Hockey or your local hockey shop, it blows your mind. It's unbelievable to get to the top of the line.
I did 10 years in retail. A lot of that was spent at sporting goods chains. And yeah. I can tell you firsthand, hockey is going to be probably one or two, the second or highest most expensive sport that your child can get into and play. But having said that, I think that with the U.S. sweeping gold in men's and women's hockey, we're going to start seeing a broader acceptance of it, even at that lower youth level, like we did with soccer over the last couple decades and how soccer has the foothold in America that it has now. I think we'll see something like that. And, hopefully, people like to make fun of trickle-down economics, not to get political, but hopefully that can trickle down. And so that, more people from Arizona, let's say, can get their kid into hockey and they can become the next Austin Matthews.
And so that then, to me, puts more onus on the National Hockey League, who finally let off the reins and allowed their players to play in this tournament. I would guess at least partially spurred on by the success of the Four Nations and the previous success of the World Cup of Hockey. They finally realized that, hey, even though this is not an NHL sanctioned event, the exposure that our players are going to get, the exposure that our game gets, just the general interaction with the sport of hockey that we get from a 3-week stretch, internationally speaking, is worth more both now and in the future. It's an investment in the sport's future to allow these guys to continue to play at the highest international level. So now the question becomes, can the NHL capitalize on this? Can you see this reflected in growth of those grassroots youth travel programs? Can you see growth in attendance in terms of ratings, in terms of social media interaction? Can the I give a crap about hockey group grow because of this? And it's not an overly nuanced answer. I certainly hope so, because it's an awesome, awesome sport. It's a great sport to watch on TV, but it is nothing compared to being in the building and actually watching it, especially at the NHL level. I grew up in college hockey rinks watching it at that level too. It's awesome. You have a number of unbelievable college hockey programs in this area that can also be a part of. And I'm glad you brought up the PWHL, because they play out of both Saugus at UMass Lowell and now at Gannis at BU. And that is an awesome product as well. And they do a great job in terms of putting together the game day experience in addition to the hockey that you're seeing on the ice. The sport is growing, and I hope that the NHL can continue to use opportunities like this to modernize, to grow, to try to expand your reach, to maybe put some pressure on your TV on your TV contracts to make it seem like they actually care about the sport that they're paying so much money to advertise. Yeah, Tristan.
I was going to bring up TV, because that's a big part of it. And this is a problem that is plaguing basically all of professional sports right now, is TV rights, where you can watch your teams, when you can watch them.
Yeah.
Until this gets sorted out on a broader scale, I think it's going to be hard for any pro league to really grab a foothold if you use like the NFL as like your barometer for that.
Yeah, anything not named the NFL, or I guess college football as the extension of that, is fighting for an increasingly distant second place. And now there are rumors that Roger Goodell is going to go back to some of these TV providers and go, hey, you paid whatever it is, $5 billion this time around. Now it's 10. And hey, the contract was up in 5 years, but now it's up now. And so you then have rumors that Gary Bettman has been initiating conversations with the TV providers. And all of a sudden they're clutching their pearls. They're, oh, you know, we need to know if we're about to have to double our $5 billion investment in the NFL. So if I'm ESPN, oh, I can't give you an answer on hockey right now. So I don't know. I don't know where this leads. If it could lead to one TV entity, and a lot of people mentioned TNT and TBS and the Turner family because they just lost the NBA. Let's use that for example. If the NHL can at some point land on one TV provider, one family, so to speak, that puts all their resources into it, that gives A-plus broadcasters, broadcast quality, audio, visual, studio crews, social media engagement. If they build up the event that is hockey, I think you can start to get a little bit more positive momentum. But it's this damn reputation of this league. They just have not been able to capitalize seemingly at any point on these major events that have happened. So I'm hoping, and the texture brings it up, 774, expensive, time consuming, especially 4 to 5 a.m. mornings, but worth it all. That is absolutely what I'm saying. And the NHL, both financially and just in terms of their reach and the eyeballs that they bring in, has the chance to maybe help subsidize it for certain groups around America, make it easier, make the barriers of entry easier to clear for people, and try to get more people involved in the sport so that you can kind of start to build the ecosystem that kids are paying attention. So now teenagers are paying attention. So young adults are, with their newfound money out of college, are paying attention and going to games. And then you start to build that ecosystem that made basketball so successful, basically post-NHL lockout in 2003. So, Tristan, I've given you a pie-in-the-sky view of where I hope this goes. I don't think it's going to happen, but I really, really do hope it does.
I agree with you, Dan. And the ironic thing about all this, too, one last thing. You know, NBC, in my opinion, had a perfectly fine NHL presentation until they lost the rights a couple years ago. Since then, TNT and ESPN have held the rights, and it has just not been the same. And I think part of that is it moving away from NBC, in part Doc Emrick retiring. But be that as it may, you still turned on NBC this morning to watch USA beat Canada. So who gets the last laugh there?
Yeah, I would absolutely entertain an NBC reunion. And actually, the texter who asked for your name, Tristan Andrews, my producer and cohort today, said NBC question mark. I'd absolutely entertain that. If you can get now the NBC, the relaunched NBC Sports Network, which not a lot of people talked about, and then the growing presence of Peacock that you can stream some of these on, I talk about that. I think the Turner family, they rebranded True TV, you know, the Impractical Jokers network. They rebranded that as more of a sports slant. So you could do that on top of TBS and True TV. I think there's something there. There are ways that the NHL can try to leverage this so that they're getting the coverage that the sport deserves, because ESPN just friggin' rolls the ball out there on their coverage. It is such a joke. The technical side of things, I'm not a huge fan of most of the talent. I like Bob Wischusen, who calls Jets games on the radio, but I don't know. Past that, the list is pretty short of people that I see on ESPN's coverage and go, yeah, that's who I want. I feel like that person properly represents my sport.
Our good friend Sean McDonough, I believe, is the number one announcer on ESPN.
And I need more Sean, too. He called like seven games last year.
Yeah.
Where's Sean?
He called more games for the Sox on EEI than he did NHL last year.
Exponentially so. And I don't get it. I'm sure it's just availability and you know, contract stipulations and whatever, but more Sean McDonough, and he has a lot of fans, especially in this area. I am one of them. Tristan is clearly as well. Sean McDonough is a big game broadcaster. The more you put a guy like Sean McDonough on your game, the more I'm going to hear it and go, this game means something. If I'm a college football fan, but I hear Sean McDonough calling a Saturday night primetime NHL game on ESPN or ABC or whatever, I'm going to hear that and go, oh, this game must mean something. Sean's not just calling any game that's out there. So it's that kind of concept that you bring up, that again, it's an investment. It's something that these networks have to be willing to do that they're not. And you hope that the momentum from this Olympic tournament could maybe compel the leagues and the networks and the different wings of promoting the game of hockey to kind of grow. But I don't know. It seems to be asking a lot of this leadership regime in the NHL to make decisions like that and be forward thinking and try to do things like that. So we'll see where it goes. But just when it comes to just in a vacuum, this tournament, such a great, great showing for the Americans, who I really do think have a chance to do some special stuff for a long time. Connor Hellebuck's got at least one more tournament left in him. I think that the Hughes brothers and the Tkachuk brothers are going to be the faces of United States hockey for a long time. Jack Eichel is still in his prime. Austin Matthews, say what you will about him as a winner or a leader or whatever else, but he's got a chance to be there. So the Americans on the men's side, I think, are in great shape. And the women are going to dominate because this group that they had out there this year, young. It was a bunch of players in their early, mid-20s. Their best players, the MVP of the tournament, is still in college. It hasn't even turned pro yet. So that's the level that the women's side is at. So it should be a lot of fun in 4 years' time, crossing our fingers that NHL players are still in it when we get to 2030. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Coming up next, ESPN Radio's Freddie Coleman joins us. A lot to get to there. The NFL and its offseason, the NBA, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown potentially reuniting for the Celtics very, very soon, plus Olympics and all that with one of the very best on the national radio scene. That comes after Tristan Andrew gets you caught up on what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
23 minutes after the hour on Sunday, February 22nd, here's what's trending now on WEEI. As Dan Ball has been telling you, in Milan today, Team USA men's hockey erased a 46-year gold medal drought when Jack Hughes scored the winning goal. 2-1 was the final score in overtime, and here is how it sounded.
Watch the clock.
Kenny Albert on the call over the NBC television network. USA goaltender Connor Hellebuck had the game of his life, blocking all but one of the 42 Canadian shots on goal. Hughes and Hellebuck, along with Boston Bruins Charlie McAvoy and Jeremy Swayman, have cemented their place in Team USA hockey history with America's first gold medal in men's hockey since the Miracle on Ice team of 1980. As we wrap up the final day of action in Milano Cortina, let's check out the medal count of this, the 25th Winter Olympiad. Norway leads with 41, USA in second with 33, host nation Italy with 30, and in gold medals, Norway leads with 18, USA with 12, and the Netherlands and Italy in a tie with 10. The closing ceremony is underway as we speak. You can watch that on NBC and Peacock. Spring training day two. The Red Sox took on the Toronto Blue Jays at JetBlue Park. Nate Eaton had two doubles in the sixth inning alone, a six-run sixth inning, as the Red Sox eked out an 11-10 victory today. They are now 2-0 in spring training play. Grapefruit League action continues tomorrow when the Red Sox visit the division rival Tampa Bay Rays. First pitch from Port Charlotte, scheduled for 1:05 Monday on WEEI AM 850, the Odyssey app, and along the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Network. Shaw's, proud to be local since 1860. And finally, New England is staring down the barrel of what will go down in history as the blizzard of 26. Walls of wet and heavy snow are set to blanket the region with at least a foot of snow, possibly two in spots, beginning tonight. This nor'easter is part of a destructive bicoastal storm that will dump snow from the South Shore all the way up into central Maine. Widespread power outages are expected, wind gusts at up to 70 miles an hour, and the National Weather Service has issued a rare blizzard warning that covers most of southern New England through Monday night. So please drive safely tonight and tomorrow. Look after your neighbors and keep it here on EEI. We'll get through it together. Stay tuned for more of the Dan Ball Show after these messages. I'm Tristan Andrew. That's what's trending now on New England Sports Original WEEI Boston.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on WEEI, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll be joined by ESPN Radio's Freddie Coleman in just a couple of moments to discuss all things Olympic, NFL offseason, NBA, and much more. But before we get to him, Seth is in New Jersey on Team USA. Hi, Seth. How are you?
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
I got a few comments. What an exciting game. I was, my heartbeat was dangerous. A few things. Number one, Quinn Hughes and Zach Werenski are two defensemen who I've known are great NHL defensemen, but you never get to see them, especially Hughes, because for most of his career, he played out in, you know, Pacific time and for a bad team that nobody cared about.
Right.
And to really get to see him in that spotlight, what a player, what a skater.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Americans were struggling and being dominated during top points of that game, you just said, get the puck to Quinn Hughes. He'll know what to do with it. That guy is unbelievable. The second thing is he was paired up with Charlie McAvoy, and that's maybe the best defensive pairing I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, McAvoy, he was more staying at home, but did you see him in the net blocking goals? I mean, the guy was unbelievable.
Made a save behind Hellebuck. Yeah.
Yes. Just fantastic. And then I could go on and on, but the last thing I'll mention is, you know, the other guy that I haven't seen much of, who I was really impressed by, was Werenski. What a player. You know, he's a big guy who has those skills. But on that game winner, everybody coming down the ice was struggling with the puck and being bothered by a Canadian player and just barely managed to keep control of it. And then when Werenski gets the puck in the corner and MacKinnon comes at him, he's got 2 inches and 10 pounds on MacKinnon, and he just pushes him out of the way and makes that pass. And that was an absolute thing of beauty. Obviously, Hellebuck got screwed for not being the MVP, because he absolutely was.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Seth. Thank you for the call. I appreciate the thoughts there. A couple things to get to. Yeah, Quinn Hughes, and I mentioned this on the afternoon show last Thursday when the U.S. played their first preliminary game. Tage Thompson, but more specifically Quinn Hughes, the two main players for the United States that were not included in the Four Nations faceoff, were both huge, huge, huge X factors in this tournament. Tage Thompson was left off the roster because he wasn't viewed as a fit for what the team was trying to do. And Quinn Hughes was injury related. Right before the beginning of the tournament, it was deemed that he wasn't good enough to go. And, you know, they were mentioning it during the intermission between the third period and overtime today. Quinn Hughes's motor, his physical ability is such that they'd essentially just throw him out on the ice and he'd play all of overtime, or he'd get to the bench and he would let the coaching staff know when he was ready to go. And that's just how much better than everybody else he was in this tournament. He and his brother Jack were three or four biggest reasons that you win this. It's probably Quinn Hughes, Connor Hellebuck, and Jack Hughes in that order, in terms of like your three stars of the tournament, so to speak. So Quinn, yeah, a kid that played out in Vancouver, so you didn't see him much unless they were playing the Bruins, unless you were, you know, a sicko and watching the NHL Network after midnight like me. You didn't see a lot of his game. But yeah, to see the way that he just would go, and then just the smooth nature with which he moved with the puck and moved through the offensive zone and would just make little quick stick handles so that even the best forecheckers for the Canadians had no chance to take the puck off of him. You could not knock the puck off of Quinn Hughes. And the point that Seth makes also about that pairing, Quinn Hughes at his best made Charlie McAvoy largely at his best. I mean, he took a couple of penalties, but it's Chuck McAvoy. Like, that's you have to bake that into the pie with him. He's gonna get beat to holy hell. Like, you look at the poor kid's face after the tournament, you're like, my God, man, You could never just play an easy game. It is always a million miles an hour for Charlie McAvoy. And that's what I think Bruins fans have finally settled on with Charlie McAvoy. Is he a first-pairing defenseman in the NHL? Yes, and a damn good one. But if he has to carry a pairing, like say when he's paired with Mason Lorai, for example, when you have to carry the other guy on that pairing, McAvoy is not able to do that. There's really only a handful of guys in the league, and you saw a boatload of them in this game. Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes, Zach Werenski being three, just that were in this game alone, that can carry a top pairing, that can play upwards of 25 minutes a night, regardless of who they're playing with. McAvoy needs somebody who is going to be able to balance him so that you have more of an offensive-minded, puck-moving defenseman with him that's elite, then that brings the best out of McAvoy. But if he has to worry about essentially babysitting the other guy that's on his pairing in addition to playing his own game, it then knocks him out of his own game, which is why everybody saw him in the Four Nations last year before his injury and went, what is going on with Charlie McAvoy? Why is he playing like his hair's on fire in this tournament, but he can't do that with the Bruins? A, it's 82 games, so you got to pace yourself. But B, he's paired with elite talent, so it makes him better. Yes, Tristan?
Just wanted to mention, just to support your argument, time on ice. Charlie McAvoy is the only guy on Team USA not named Jack Eichel or Quinn Hughes that had more than 20 minutes on the ice during today's game.
Right. There you go. That's your perfect example, because he was your second best defenseman. And because he's not the quarterback of your first power play, that's kind of where you see the discrepancy there. But if McAvoy is the 1A to your 1B as your top pairing in an NHL team, you love how it looks. But if he's your 1 to a distant second best defenseman on your pairing, that's when it kind of weighs his game down. So that's kind of just some of the nuances of where I think McAvoy is in terms of, like, is he elite best in the league? No. But can he be part of a damn good pairing? Yes, and you saw that as part of this tournament. So the two of them were awesome, and Zach Werenski needs to get his ass out of Columbus. He needs to go play on a team that has a chance to win a Stanley Cup, because if he moves to a major market team, Boston, if he moves to a major market team, all of a sudden the conversation around him changes, because he is elite on a team that gives him nothing to work with. And unfortunately, his elite play is not just lost in the time difference between Boston and Vancouver. His elite play is lost in the fact that Columbus is just a perennial non-factor. They cannot escape the mediocrity of being right on that wild card cut line. So, yeah, he was one of those guys where you put him on the national stage and you realize, oh, this is what the league has been missing. You're missing seeing this guy be a top 10 defenseman in the league, if not top 5 on some years. But that's a guy who definitely benefited from having the amplified stage, was Zach Werenski. And good for Connor Hellebuck, man. UMass Lowell product, drafted in the 5th round by the Winnipeg Jets, and has just gone through a year. I mean, he was the MVP of the NHL last year. Winnipeg was a President's Trophy team, and they just flame out in the playoffs again. And that's kind of been the story of the career of Connor Hellebuck. So does a guy who steps up and plays the best game of his life on the biggest stage of his life, can he kind of grab that now for his post 30 back half of his career in Winnipeg or maybe somewhere else? Because that team is god awful this year. He won't have to worry about competing for a Stanley Cup this year. But is that something that changes for him? Does it change for Austin Matthews, the captain of Team USA, the captain of the Maple Leafs? Or is he a guy that can't necessarily stand up to the big stages, as has been shown in his NHL career? Go ahead, Tristan.
I am wondering, wondering if Jeremy Swayman must think about his teammate Hellebuck. Yeah, he's got the gold medal just like his teammate, but I'm wondering how this will hit for Swayman as he now has to go back and 10 goal for the Bruins for the rest of the season.
I wonder about that as well, especially because his one game in the tournament, he let in a goal from center ice, among other errors in net. They won the game, so, you know, you can't take that away from him, but it wasn't necessarily an awe-inspiring performance for Swayman, who I have to give credit to is having a very good season, especially compared to the bar that he set for himself last year. But yeah, that's another guy who I think both internationally and in the NHL, you just wonder, is this a top 10 guy? Is this a is this a team that can backstop a team to a Stanley Cup or backstop a team to a gold medal? And I think the answer to both of those questions at the moment is no. Or it's at very least, the answer is incomplete. I don't know yet. It's not a complete grade. I have to see him falter on that stage before I know it. But, I mean, he had some great chances with Linus Allmark to win, to do some significant winning, and it didn't pan out. So, I don't know. He continues to be a guy who Bruins fans just want an answer on. Is he our goaltender of the future, or is he nothing more than just a platoon goalie that's now getting paid to be a number one goalie? And he hasn't done enough for himself for a long enough amount of time to prove that he is a true number one, a guy you can play 60-plus games, and certainly hasn't proven that he's a guy that can backstop you to 16 wins in a Stanley Cup. That has not happened yet for sure. So I'm very fascinated by that as well, as Swayman continues to flummox Bruins fans as the season gets underway later this week. Okay, we're wrapping things up here on WEEI. We're handing you over to national coverage via the Infinity Sports Network, Westwood One Sports, all that kind of stuff coming up at the top of the hour. So some spare thoughts, including the Celtics getting back in action tonight against the Los Angeles Lakers, and maybe one final chance for them to see LeBron James after not seeing Steph Curry a couple of nights ago. That and more coming up as we wrap things up here on WE.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Boy, Tristan, this really gives the ominous feel. What's going on with this rejoin here?
Oh, my gosh. Our listeners in Maine will know exactly what this is. This is the theme music from WCSH-TV's Storm Center coverage. They've been using this music for their winter weather coverage for, I don't know, longer than I've been alive, surely. But I felt that was probably a fitting way to wrap this show up and go into this blizzard, Dan.
Yeah, I would say so. We are we're the last line of local defense here on WEEI before we hand you over to national coverage here at the top of the hour. So also happening just after the top of the hour, the Boston Celtics taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. 6:30 tip on NBC. What a couple weeks it's been for NBC, going from the gold medal game today into the closing ceremonies into Celtics and Lakers.
They got MLB in the next few weeks. They got the MLB package back. So I think I read somewhere NBC is going to be the first network ever to have a day of the week carved out for a nightly primetime nationally telecast game between football, basketball, and now Major League Baseball.
Crazy. And I also saw them announce that they're doing the same thing that I think it was the Roku broadcast did, where they're having local analysts. So it'll be Jason That's Benetti, good. Who calls games for the Chicago White Sox, or did for
Jason.
The Chicago White Sox. No, he's now with Detroit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So Benetti is the one play-by-play guy, and then they'll have an analyst from each team. So you should be getting Sunday Night Loomer, if things go according to plan.
Jason Benetti and Lou Merlone in the booth is going to be must-see TV. Those two
music
guys.
Music to your ears.
Absolutely. And Jason Benetti, he does not get enough love, and he gets so much love already. Jason Benetti is, for my money, probably one of the better baseball play-by-play voices up there with Sean McDonough.
100%. Right there with you.
And so, Joe Castiglione,
yeah,
and Will Fleming, obviously.
That's right, absolutely. Two of the two best, and then everybody else is fighting for second. But anyways, so a aside from that, it is Sunday Night Basketball tonight. Celtics 36-19 coming off of a win against the Warriors after the restart from the All-Star break. The Lakers 34-21. Clean injury report on both sides other than Jason Tatum returning. And Justin Turpin wrote on our website yesterday, quote, there's no date for him to return, even though now you're seeing multiple different flex dates going to national primetime coverage at the beginning of March. So read into that however you want. Five-part documentary on NBC, a couple games in primetime on NBC to start the month of March. But sure, no date for return for Jason Tatum as he gets things underway. But should be a fun game tonight. Last thing I wanted to get to, and if the Red Sox didn't take up 3.5 hours of our time here this afternoon, afternoon show on Friday ranked their top five Patriots needs. They ended up with edge rusher number one, an offensive weapon at number two. That was whittled down both between wide receiver and tight end. Offensive line was their third need on their list, with a free safety or somebody potentially replacing Jalen Hawkins at four, and depth at the linebacker position was number five, with the honorable mention being a punter as Bryce Behringer goes into the final year of his rookie deal. I was a little surprised by that. And I think a flashy edge rusher in order to add another element to your defense and really allow for you to get consistent pressure without having to blitz all the time, that's certainly a game changer. The Patriots were bottom third of the league in terms of sacks, despite being top 10, I think, in terms of total points allowed, which is a disparity that you don't often see, especially for teams that had as much success as they did. But I think this whole conversation starts and ends with the offensive line, personally. I would rank that number one, two, and three. And I would even say, kind of to that point, that it's an addition somewhere on this offensive line. And Ted Johnson landed on a guard that you can slide between Will Campbell and assumedly Jared Wilson, who you slide over to that center position. But it's also just answering the internal questions that you have in addition to adding something externally. It's, is Morgan Moses running it back for another year? Is he healthy enough? Does he have enough in him? And can he return to at least what was a better than league average level? Is Mike Onwenu's contract prohibitive to keeping him back to where you have to rethink things with him in order to sign Christian Gonzalez and also do your business this offseason? Is Garrett Bradbury back if Jared Wilson kicks over to center? And is Jared Wilson a starter at the NFL level right now? Did he prove enough as your left guard to where he earned it? For my money, you have five positions and five questions to where there is at least one question that you can ask about every single spot. And there were flashes of really, really good play from this group, especially the right side of the O-line, to where I think there is certainly less concern from the center position on down to the right. But I think that if you run it back with Will Campbell as your left tackle and Jared Wilson as your left guard and just leave that alone, then to me it kind of renders some of your other decisions in this offseason a bit moot. Because if Drake May is going to continue to be top five in the league in terms of sacks taken, and he's going to be running for his life against better pass rushes, just as a rule, then with the schedule that you're playing this upcoming year, in which you have just a bear, especially on the road, you're not going to be successful.
Nasty.
Yeah, and I want Will Campbell to be nasty. I love everything about him other than the performance on the field. Like, I love the personality. I will fight and die for my quarterback. I love the thing he said while he was still at LSU at his end of year presser, saying if you give up a sack a game, you're working at Amazon. The problem is he got way too close to that threshold and then beyond it in the playoffs to where it's just simply got to be better. I love that he's boys with Drake May. I think he's kind of a comfort blanket. They're both from the South. They both speak the same language, all that kind of stuff. But you can't do that while also being bad at your job. So, yeah, to me, that's really need one, two, and three. And I think a settled handful of questions on the offensive line opens up your offense more, and I think that allows you to then build off of that, add an edge rusher, do what you got to do on the defensive side of the football. But that is where I stood on that particular conversation, and we are out of time. So thank you, Tristan, back behind the glass. A lot of fun to work with you, my friend. First of hopefully many with the two of us here. That is it for us. Full slate of shows. That's right. It's Freebird takes us out. Full slate of shows tomorrow. Obviously, the weather is incoming, so stay safe out there. Stay warm. Don't strain your back trying to shovel the snow. Just be patient. Let it happen. And please, work as a team, be neighbors with your neighbors, be friends with your friends, and we'll all get through this one together, as it looks like it's going to be a doozy. Stay safe out there. Yes, Tristan?
Oh, yeah. Just don't be the guy that is shoveling your neighbors out of spite, like that one guy we heard about a couple weeks ago. Do it out of the kindness of your heart. Your neighbors will thank you.
Have a great rest of your Sunday. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.